BBC Sounds. Music, radio, podcasts.
Hello. It's not that long ago, certainly in living memory, that it was almost unheard of for a blind child to attend a mainstream school. The parents of those who did had to take on the education establishment to achieve it. But times, attitudes, technology have all changed. Now, only approximately 5% of visually impaired children go to special schools. This programme isn't intended to rerun the old argument about mainstream versus special schools, but there are those who think that the issue now is one of lack of choice between mainstream and special, and that money, or the lack of it, lies at its heart. New College Worcester, NCW, is a residential school with just under 60 visually impaired students this year, between the ages of 11 and 19. But its head teacher thinks that there are others who would take the special school option up if they could, but who are prevented by local authorities' unwillingness to fund them due to their own financial problems. Now, the college has sent an open letter to the Secretaries of State for Work and Pensions and Education as part of their campaign to raise awareness of this issue. Here's part of what they wrote.
We strongly believe that the government needs to consider a more invest-to-save approach. If children and young people receive timely support that meets their needs at the right kind of school, then they are much more likely to be prepared and able to access the workplace when they are older. We call for the government to invest some of the Get Britain Working funding in providers like New College Worcester, who are already supporting those who are at an increasing risk of becoming economically inactive before their careers have even begun. There is also a need for a wider understanding of the pressures of funding on the sector, and we ask the government to strongly consider either extending the statutory override that is due to end in 2026 or remove the debt that is threatening local authorities once the override ends.
Well, I've been talking to the head teacher of New College Worcester, Rachel Perks, about her campaign.
The issue goes beyond getting more money for NCW for students to come here. It's totally wrong that students are having to wait to receive answers to decisions as to where their need is best met. We've spoken to countless people, both in the vision impaired community and the wider SEND community, who are experiencing similar challenges to us. And that's backed up by the number of organisations who signed our open letter, including the National Association of Special Schools, the Thomas Pocklington Trust, Blind in Business, RNC. The UK is home to some of the best SEND schools in the world, supporting young people with disabilities to thrive. And the biggest government spend at the moment is on social care. There will have to be enough money later on down the line if social care pick up students as opposed to the workplace.
Let's talk about the workplace, because you've targeted this letter very much at the government's Get Britain Working drive. Mm-hmm. Now, obviously, good tactics in terms of explaining why you think it's in the government's long-term interest to do it, to spend money now rather than have to spend it later. But how much does this reflect NCW's need for the money to do its job?
Well, I think if you look at the contextual data with what's happening with VI education at the moment and what's currently falling short, it becomes quite apparent why we chose to take that particular tack. From the data that we have, we know that only one in four blind and partially sighted people of working age are in employment. NCW graduates, 9 out of 10 go on to further education or employment after leaving. You know, you've got cash-strapped councils have in the past year paid 18.1 million to private special schools that have repeatedly failed standards inspections. And there's a perfect storm brewing in terms of the increasing numbers of EHCPs that are coming through at the moment. Councils facing insolvencies, new accounting rules change next year on SEND spending. You've got changes to things like disability benefits, council budget cuts and freezes. And we are showing that what we deliver is of a better standard. So, please continue to support us.
So is some local authorities' reluctance to send children to a residential school outside the authority, is that affecting take-up of places for you and therefore your financial position?
I think it's important to focus on the fact that the lag affects the student more than anything. We can support that student in the mainstream, in their mainstream school. We do that a lot around the UK. What we tend to find is that there has been a breakdown in placement, and the person at the centre of that, who's that young person, is not in education at all. And we are having to deliver that education remotely whilst that sort of, you know, debate continues as to whether they should come here or not. And many times parents are having to go down, or families are having to go down, a very long, arduous, financially costly route to get their child to the placement that they believe will serve them best, whether that is mainstream or whether it's somewhere like NCW. There are many others around the country, and it's that delay that means that learning time is lost for that young person.
The school is expensive, isn't it? I mean, more expensive, I think, than some of the country's most prestigious public schools. Why is the cost so high? And it's not surprising, is it, local authorities in their current state jib at the price?
A little bit of a challenge to you there. We are quality assured by every local authority who sends a student to us. In terms of the costs that many local authorities pay for students with a variety of SEND needs, our costs sit pretty much in the mid-range, and the Department for Education has supported that.
But it is a residential school, and that's, you know, that's a logical reason why it will be expensive. But if a local authority is comparing that with the cost of educating a child who's living at home, clearly there's a gap, a big one.
Absolutely. And, you know, we've been more flexible in terms of our residential offers. We do 5 days, we do day provision. One of the things we are noticing is that we've had more local authorities, particularly for sixth form, asking for the 3-day model, because, of course, you only have to provide 15 hours of curriculum support. And we have said that no, that's not available because of our curriculum framework for vision impairment that we deliver on top of the mainstream curriculum.
But do you accept that there are visually impaired children who will thrive in mainstream education and learn many of the social skills, which makes inclusion after they leave easier?
Absolutely. And I absolutely believe that. And I think there is a place for both of us. The work that we've been doing on the campaigning level isn't about a binary choice, this or that. It is about acceptance that we need to exist to support that choice for families to make, and that we can support that learning that happens within the mainstream. You know, if you're a school where this is your first student with VI that you have, then we are able to provide a lot of support around that.
We are recording this before the financial review, but all reports suggest that schools are going to get more money, £4.5 billion, we understand. Is some of that going to come your way, do you think?
I think because we are a non-maintained special school, I think a very small amount of that will come our way. But what it will allow other schools to achieve is that choice in terms of utilising the specialisms that are out there and utilising our specialism to support them. And I think that might have been what Catherine McKinnell was alluding to in response to our campaign letter. She said that specialist institutions such as NCW will be crucial touchstones for ongoing reform. And I think that's perhaps what she is alluding to in terms of this additional revenue that's able to be, well, we hope, will be coming forwards from the spending review.
Rachel Perks, head of New College Worcester. I mentioned at the beginning of this programme how parents have had to take on their local authorities to get funding for their children to go to the school of their choice. This is the position Suzanne Hollinshead found herself in when her son Zach was struggling at his local school. And Suzanne, I think originally you felt mainstream was right for Zach, didn't you?
Yes, we did. But really, for us, the cracks started to appear when Zach moved to middle school. The environment became a lot harder for him with his set of complex needs, really. So we really saw him start to withdraw even more from his peers. The way his learning was provided for him, unfortunately, schools are just, they've got so many children to look after. For Zach, with a vision impairment and various other things going on, he's also neurodiverse, he was struggling to access the work. So he would come out of school exhausted and he would instantly go to sleep. We would wake him up for his dinner, he'd go back to sleep and then rinse and repeat the next day. So it was really tough for him.
What reasons did the local authority give you for their resistance to sending Zach to New College?
Purely financial. It was obviously public purse being the key issue driving their decision to fight us over it. But I think because visual impairment is a low incidence but high impact disability, there is a lack of understanding about the impact being in an environment that the child feels completely drowned in. And that's how Zach would actually describe it himself, that he felt small and invisible and like he was drowning and the learning was bouncing off him.
What did it take to win your case?
It cost us dearly financially, Peter, and emotionally as a family. You know, we spent over £70,000.
You took out a second mortgage, didn't you?
We did. And to be honest, we did hit the point where we had no more money to add into the process. And we were fortunate with the legal team supporting us that they carried on the fight. It was well worth it.
What effect did getting the place at special school have on Zach?
Oh, gosh. Zach was in a mental health downward spiral, so he had given up. We'd removed him from mainstream school. He saw no value in his life at all. So those were really quite dark days for us. We felt helpless. But if I could just fast forward to today, that landscape is completely unrecognisable for Zach. And, you know, he's now a confident and funny, ambitious 16-year-old, and he's currently trucking through the marathon of GCSE exams. But it's not all about the academic achievements. It's about the other elements that a specialist setting can provide for a child like Zach.
Suzanne Holland said, thank you very much indeed. And New College seems to have had no trouble in persuading ex-pupils to speak up for it on its website. This is Tobias and first Zoe.
The independent living skills provision is fantastic and it's tailored to student-specific capabilities, things that they want to work on. And then off the back of that, when I did go to university, I found that my skills for living independently, cooking independently, doing laundry were at least as good, if not better, than a lot of my sighted peers. For instance, I ended up sort of demonstrating, showing them how to do specific things that I learned at New College.
I was able by the end of my time to join every club. So I was in the rock school, the choir, the jazz band, I did some musical theatre, I did folk, and I had lessons in piano, the saxophone and the organ. And I truly do not believe that I would be the person I am today without all of that.
Tobias and Zoe. Well, among the 400 signatories to the open letter were a number of other special schools, including Joseph Clark School. It's unusual for a school for visually impaired children in the sense that it's a day school, it's in London, and students ranging from 3 to 19 attend it. Well, I'm joined by head teacher Shadia Filali Mute. First of all, Shadia, tell me more about the school. I mean, how many pupils, what it's basically set up to do?
Yeah, we cater for 110 pupils and we're based in East London. So really, it's a day school, but we actually provide also a very bespoke curriculum and also life skill opportunities.
And how are you funded, Shadia?
We are funded by local authorities. We work with 17 different local authorities.
So, I mean, you heard what Rachel had to say about New College Worcester. Have you got similar problems in terms of what you need to fulfil your role?
Yeah, many London boroughs are facing rising demand of SEND support, particularly high needs provision. but the budgets are under immense strain. And local authorities are doing their best under difficult circumstances, but the scale of need is growing. And schools like ours are often supporting children with increasingly complex needs with limited resources.
How would extra funding make a difference?
Really, for us, is extra funding for recruitment for SEND specialists and teachers. So recruiting and retaining skilled staff in specialist school is getting really hard. This will require expertise, huge dedication, and the system needs to do more to attract and support people. So investment in training and career development will be key to strengthening the provision nationally.
Well, we're also joined by the National Association of Special Schools. They're a membership organisation representing non-local authority special schools in England and Wales. They have also signed this open letter. Murray Davis is their Senior Policy and Public Affairs Officer. Murray, I mean, why did NAS sign this open letter?
Well, we're supporting this campaign because special schools across the country are doing life-changing work for children and young people with complex needs. We have heard from the minister within their letters that they say there remains a critical role for special schools. However, what we really need from government is commitments for more collaborative working with the sector to share information about what their plans are.
Well, actually, we did ask the Department for Education to speak to the Minister for School Standards, Catherine McKinnell. We were told that they were not able to put a minister forward on this particular occasion. They did tell us that they were investing £740 million to encourage councils to create more specialist places in mainstream schools, paving the way for significant long-term reform, and local authorities will be able to use this funding to expand special schools for the most complex needs. Does that encourage you?
Our concerns with that budget is very much it's around capital funding, and it does not really address the concerns that colleagues have already mentioned around staffing, recruitment and retention, and the other provision that is needed around those units. It's not just about the buildings. It needs to be about the support available and the knowledge and expertise of specialists. We want the government to address the local authority debt crisis. We expect some decisions to be made during the spending review at the end of this week. And that is really important that the government does make that decision on what they're going to do. So local authorities, schools, and everybody within the system can forward plan effectively.
Let me just quickly finally go back to Shadia. How confident are you that some of that money is going to come your way?
I think there is a clear desire to improve things by the government. But what's needed now is a joined up investment from early identification right through the specialist provision. We know what works. The challenge is making sure that those solutions are properly supported and available for us.
Shadia Filale-Mute, Mari Davis, thank you both very much indeed. And that's it for today. We welcome your comments, your questions, your experiences of anything that we've raised. Email in touch at bbc.co.uk. Leave us voicemails on 0161 836 1338. From me, Peter White, and producer Beth Hemmings, goodbye.